It's Match of My Lifetime now for you. Every single Thursday night at this time, we go back to a former footballing hero of Liverpool, Everton, or Tranmere Rovers. And it's Tranmere Rovers' turn tonight. And a player that is probably best known for his days at Prenton Park, and least known now because John Bishop is his comedian brother and maybe the better known of the family at the moment. But it wasn't always that way when he was a marauding midfielder at Prenton Park in the 80s and the 90s as well. If you are a Tranmere fan, you'll know all about his cult hero status, but this guy is absolutely adored by Rovers fans. Tonight he talks about the non-league breakthrough. He made that at the age of 25, unheard of these days. His goals at Prenton Park, his Elvis impressions, and hitchhiking to Wembley after he'd left the club with no ticket. He still ended up sat by the manager on the bench on that famous day when they went up through the playoffs. So that's how popular he was. And I'm honoured to say that I spoke to him earlier on this week. Eddie Bishop, formerly of Tranmere Rovers, is subject of Match of My Life tonight.
City Sport. One player. One life. The Match of My Life. City Talk 105.9.
My family originates from Highton. But I left Liverpool when I was four or five. The big overspill. We moved to a place called Winsford out in Cheshire. That's where I spent most of my childhood. That's the childhood I remember most from when I was in Winsford. And I went to school with like old Mark McCarrick, who played with me at Tranmere, so I've got some fond memories of being with him at school and stuff. My dad played when he was younger, he was well known in the local area playing amateur football and that. And obviously that's where we got our interest from, me and John. And that's where I really got into football. And most families are the same from Liverpool, you know, it's a big footballing area, it's in your blood. Everybody I knew was involved in football, played football, so I sort of left. But when did we leave Winsford? I think we left when I was about 15 years of age, moved over to Runcorn. So I've got my two sisters, Kathy and Carol, yeah, and then obviously John, who's well known for other things now apart from football with his comedian career.
Do you remember a time at which, might have been at school or maybe later, what you thought, I could have a chance of making a career out of football for myself here?
Never ever really thought when I was really younger about making a career. I just wanted to play football and to be the best at maybe getting the school team and then maybe progress from there, getting the county team and just see what developed. It was only when I think I was around about 14, 15 that I got invited for a couple of trials down at Wrexham. I even had a couple at Liverpool that you sort of maybe, you know, maybe I am a little bit, you know, I'm not too bad at this and there might be something in it, but. And then nothing ever came from those trials, so I lost a bit of heart there and never really got that apprenticeship that everybody was looking for. Once you became an apprentice footballer, you always thought you had a chance. I know what happened with Mark. Mark had an apprenticeship at West Bromwich Albion and then he went on to Birmingham. But that never really happened with me, so I lost a little bit of heart, I suppose, and just sort of played local football up until maybe 18, 19 and started making a little bit of money out of it with local teams like Middlewich and Winsford and teams like that, you know.
What about the trial games? Do you remember anyone that was there that went on to make it afterwards? Did you hold any memories from that?
I don't remember anybody at all. I remember being really disappointed. I remember going to Wrexham and I spent the whole day there at Wrexham. My dad was with me and they sort of narrowed it down from maybe 4,000 kids. Now, there wasn't that many, but it seemed that many. Narrowed it down to a final 11 to play against their YTS apprentices, and I was in that final 11, and they were looking for six lads to come back, and I really felt as though I'd done enough to be called back, and I wasn't, and that was a big disappointment for me, and I think that knocked me back a couple of years, to be honest. You sort of lost a bit of confidence in yourself.
What about your first break then? When did it come with a part-time team where you thought, God, this is a little bit of a taste of the big time now? There's people actually watching the games I'm playing.
Oh, God, I suppose my first, maybe thinking I was doing okay at the game, I was playing with a team called Middlewich Athletic, and I think I was getting £8 a game, something like that. And I was made up with that. and I progressed from there to Winsford United, a little bit more money there. And I had a couple of years just playing local non-league football. And I was quite happy with that. I had a job as well where I'd learned to weld. And so I had a job, I was getting a bit of money from there. And then I went on to Northwich Vicks then. I was playing for Northwich Vicks for a couple of years, which was in the old, what you call a conference now, it was called the Gola League then. And I had a good couple of years there at Northwich, really enjoyed my time there. And I sort of floated around a couple of non-league clubs, went to Altrincham, then to Runcorn, and then Johnny King took a chance with me at Tramier. Then when I thought I'd well missed the boat, I think I was 24, 25, I always Sort of get my age mixed up at times, you know.
It's unheard of now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think I had... It's funny, but when you sort of finish the game and you meet up with people you haven't seen for a while, I remember one guy, he was a top coach in non-league circles anyway, saying to me that, he said, we always wanted to sign you. I forget what club he was at, but he said, we always wanted to sign you, but we wouldn't take a chance because of your bad disciplinary record. I did have a bad disciplinary record, you know, getting away from it, even when I turned pro. And that was in the days when you could tackle, you know. So no one had really taken a chance with me, I suppose. And when I was at Altrincham, I enjoyed it at Altrincham, but we had a guy come in called Tommy Docherty, you know, managed Manchester United, Scotland and everywhere. And he was, I didn't really hit it off with the Doc. A couple of things just didn't work out. And he sort of let me go. He just let me go on a free to Runcorn. And I think that was from Runcorn then. I was only there 2 months and then Tranmere came in. So it's funny how things work out, really. But maybe by not getting that little free transfer to Runcorn, Tranmere might have spotted me. And, well, I don't know.
I mean, Tranmere, when they came on for you, there was a fair bit of interest from other league clubs. I think you had quite a few trials around that time, didn't you, before you actually became a pro with them?
Oh, I remember going to Bolton one time. I had the trial at Bolton. Phil Neal was the manager there. And I don't know how I can say with this. Best way of saying it is I had a bad stomach and I couldn't run, and I remember having to come off during the trial to go to the toilet. I was just, you know, I was in a bad way, so that didn't really work out for me. I remember going to Stoke, I had a couple of days at Stoke. You tend to think, it's not going to work out for me, maybe age is against me now, because, you know, the lads get picked up 18, 19, not 24. So it was a surprise when Kingy came in for me, really, Tranmere.
That was the glory time for Tranmere as well. When you signed, as I say, 25, 1988, that was really, as the crest of the wave was beginning at Prenton Park.
Yeah, all because of me. No. I'd signed the season after. They just, I think they stayed up by the last game the season before. Gary Williams scored that goal in the last game. And I signed halfway through the season, the following season. Just as Peter Johnson got involved and the gates were going up and the things started to develop then. It was a good time to be there. I think we'd qualified for this competition at Wembley. The Mercantile Credit thing, it was like a celebration of the Football League, 100 years of the Football League or something. You had this mini tournament at Wembley. And I'd signed a month before and Tranmere were going to Wembley. It was like a little mini tournament. It was only 20 minutes each way, but he done quite well down there. Well, I was on the bench, but the whole experience of going to Wembley was brilliant. And I thought, oh, this will do for me, you know.
Great encouragement coming from supporters who travelled down from Tranmere. They must have got up very early indeed. And here's a possibility, Martindale. The roof has come off here. Well, you'd have thought that was the winning goal in the cup final, to judge from the reaction of the Tranmere supporters. You might say they've got their just desserts.
Coming from non-league, I was a little bit in awe, and it took me probably a little bit of a while to settle down and maybe believe that I was worthy of a place there. I kept thinking, you know, the likes of Ian Moore, Johnny Morrissey and Jim Steele, Jim Harvey, fantastic players, and I always felt as though I was a little bit in awe of them. Probably until the following season when I really maybe established myself and, the fans seemed to take to me a little bit. That gave me the confidence to think, you know, I am worth a place here, you know.
Because you made your name through the non-leagues. You came in the March and then you were back out on loan, I think, to Northwich, weren't you, by the November time. You came back in the promotion season, 35 appearances that season, which makes you think, I'm ready for this.
That was a good, that promotion season was great, really. I can remember the very last game. I think we needed a point to go up, and we played Crewe, and there was 15,000 there, and it was, I remember I was on the bench the last game, and I came on the last 20 minutes or something, but it was 1-1, and we had a late kickoff because of the crowd just trying to get in. It was a late kickoff, and I'm not sure, but I think it was Orient was battling for the other place for promotion. So they kicked off at their normal time, and it come through. We'd heard that we still just needed a point to go up, and their game had finished, and we're drawing 1-1 with Crewe, and we've just seen the last 15 minutes, and just back in the days when he could pass it back to the keeper, and that's all it was, the last 15 minutes. And I remember the crowd at Prenton Park more or less being right to the touchline, like the old 1923 cup final, and it was amazing. I remember Ronnie Moore coming in and saying something, just about to go to warm up, without warming up, yeah, he said, the crowds are going right back to the tunnel. and it just sort of really built it up for me. It was a good day. And I can remember at the end of the game, because we got promotion and Crewe got promotion as well, their fans came onto the pitch. There was no fight, no squabble. Everyone celebrating together and all singing together, going up in the director's box and waving to the fans and that. Oh, it was lovely.
You were trying to make your way. Jimmy Harvey was obviously the captain. Then he signed Neil McNabb not long after, and you were sort of battling to try and get a little bit of a run of games, weren't you?
Yeah, well, there was always a bit of a battle with me and Davey Martindale anyway. He was a different type of player to me. He was more of a ball player than me. I was more of a ball winner, I suppose, if you want to call it that. So I always had a battle with him. So then when he signed Neil McNabb, like two players I was battling with for that other midfield slot, because, you know, Jimmy more or less made that spot his own. And I think probably that was the beginning of the end, I suppose, for me, really. Well, once I knew there was too much competition, I started to get a little bit disheartened, and I was there and interested with the clubs and stuff, and that's when, you know, I moved on to Chester then. You know.
Well, we'll get on to Chester in just a second. Yeah. Talk to us first about the playoff final. Obviously, you'd finished fourth in the third division the season after you'd come up, so you were really on the crest of a wave. And then all of a sudden, you know, the season comes where you're at Wembley twice, Leyland Af, and then the playoff final.
Yeah, Bristol Rovers. And then the week after, again, I was on the bench, getting splintered out. And then the week after, we had the playoff final against Notts County. And that was the one I played. I came on last 20-25 minutes, and that was just fantastic for me to actually play on the big pitch at Wembley. Childhood dream. From my own personal point of view, all I remember is I'd missed out the week before. Although we won the Leyland draft, I was on the bench and I never got on the pitch. And I wanted to get on. I wanted to play. I wanted to be able to say to me landlady and to my grandkids, you know, if you ever have any. I've played at Wembley, I've played that big pitch. It was always a thing you wanted to do. So we're getting beat by Notts County 2-0, and I thought, I'm not even going to wait to get warmed up. And I'm just warming up, and I'm stretching in front of John King, and I'm stretching and fixing my tie-ups and all that, and I'm saying, he's not doing it, Gaff, he's not doing it, get me on. And I knew I shouldn't have done that, but I was desperate to get on. And he just said, Bish, I admire you, whatever. And he said, get ready, you're going on. And he put me and David Fairclough, we both came on at the same time. Didn't make any difference.
The memories that you've got, I mean, you've got boxes full of newspaper cuttings that you kept, which really remind people as to, you know, you said before, you don't want to be remembered for the Elvis stuff, just how good you are. Tell us about a story linked with Tottenham, which I think goes down as probably one of your career highlights, having to mark Gazza in a League Cup game.
Yeah, we got to run against Tottenham. It was just after the 1990 World Cup, the following season, when Gazza was with all the tears and everything, and in Italy, and he was being talked about as being the best player in the world at the time. He really was on top of his game, and I was told by Johnny King to mark him. I had to mark him for that game. So I suppose in today's football, people like told you, you know, you're going to mark Ronaldo today. Oh, bloody hell, thanks. But it was great. But there was a bit of a newspaper headline the day of the game. And I never said this, but the quote was that I've stuffed bigger teddy bears than you, Gazza, because I did have a job when I was younger that involved stuffing teddy bears. And the newspapers picked up on it. I don't know where they got it from. And they had a little bit of an illustration, a bit of a cartoon figure of a teddy bear with Gazza's head on it. So the day of the game, just about to kick off, I remember Gascoigne saying, to Jimmy Harvey, are you the guy who did the teddy bears? And Jimmy said, no, it wasn't me, Tim. Pointed to me. So Gascoigne come over to me and he started singing to me, I just want to be your teddy bear. And then he'd run away. And he must have done that about six times through the game. Every time I got near to him, he just started singing the teddy bear song. It was brilliant. But he was superb that day. I did have a job keeping up with him. Didn't do too bad. I managed to get a couple of chances myself, but that was a good night. We drew 2-2 with him. I probably should have won, really. I think he won't like me saying this, but I think Dave Higgins scored an own goal towards the end to make it 2-2 for them. And then we went down to Tottenham for the replay, and we got beat 4-0. But I was talking to Gazza in the corridor at the end of the 2-2 game. I had a nice little bit of a chat with him, and he was talking, you know, when he come down for the replay, I'll introduce you to Phil Collins and stuff. Very friendly, lovely fella. But at the end of the game at White Hart Lane, we got beat 4-0. And I'm in the dressing room and he came in with a little teddy bear for me. He'd actually signed. I've still got that at home now. I've got it in my son's bedroom, in Lee's bedroom at home. So that's a nice little memento from that experience.
City Sport with Peter McDowell. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back. Eddie Bishop on Match of My Life for tonight, talking about his early days at Tranmere, making that breakthrough from non-league football at the age of 25, when I think most amateur players think that they've missed the boat. But he was to go on to become a massive cult hero at Tranmere, not just because of the things off the pitch and hitchhiking to Wembley and Elvis impersonations, but he had a great knack of coming on from the bench more often than not and scoring some vital goals. We'll hear some of those goals very soon indeed as we do part two of the life story of Eddie Bishop in Match of My Life after the break.
Foster Care Fortnight from the 12th to the 25th of May with Orange Grove Foster Care and City Talk 105.9. With over 50,000 children in care in the UK on any given day, we need more people to provide a stable, safe and caring home for children who are unable to live with their families. If you're thinking of fostering, contact Orange Grove Foster Care on 01244 661 564. Foster Care Fortnight with City Talk 105.9.
City Talk.
Words of wisdom.
Everybody seems normal until you get to know them.
City Talk 105.9.
Tasker's now. Ron Seal decking stain that was £23 is now just £18.
Tasker's. Long Lane Aintree and Wavertree Road, Liverpool.
You know, I love Buffet Star. Delicious, mouth-watering, scrumptious, piping hot, healthy Chinese and Thai food. Eat as much as you like for under £6. And talking of squid, don't you just love it pan-fried with lashings of salt and chilli?
Mm-hmm. Buffet Star. 60 delicious Thai and Chinese dishes to choose from for less than £6. Buffet Star. Hanover Street, Liverpool. Just round the corner from Central Station.
Look who's talking on 105.9.
Hello, my name's Roy Bastard, and you can catch me weekdays between 2 and 6am on City Talk 105.9.
What would be written on your gravestone?
He was all right, Tim.
Best characteristics?
I like to think I'm approachable. Certainly I've got a problem with somebody coming up to me and having a word. I've got no ego about myself, or at least not that I'm aware of. I don't look down on people, except, of course, if they are people who deserve to be looked down on.
Tell us three things about you we don't already know.
Bit of a fan of history, to be honest with you. If I'm going to read a book, it's usually got some historical value in it. Love the Second World War and all of the things involved with it. Not just the war aspect of it, but what actually created the conditions for it to start in the first place. I have a belief that there is an almighty up there. Whether or not he's a guy with a white beard, I'm not too sure, but I feel as though there are too many things on this planet that could not be left to chance. So I do believe in the existence of the big man upstairs. Unfortunately, and some people might view this as being a trifle sexist, I cannot think of a female comedian that I've ever laughed at.
City Talk 105.9.
City Sport with Peter McDowell.
City Talk 105.9.
21 minutes after 9. Rangers could have blown it tonight. Aberdeen beating them by a goal to nil. About 15 minutes to go there. So currently it is Celtic's SPL title. We're talking English football tonight though. And Tranmere Rovers cult hero Eddie Bishop is our guest tonight. We're in the 1989-90 season by now. And as Tranmere fans will realise, and neutrals as well, Wembley became like a second home for them in the Leyland AF Cup and the playoffs as well. And Eddie Bishop right at home being treated like a king as a Wirral footballing favourite.
The family original.
City Sport. One player. One life. The match of my life. City Talk 105.9.
I do remember feeling special. Really special. I remember going to Champion Plugs, I think, at a big factory. And we all had to put out a lot of suits on and we all had a bit of a walk around there. You felt like royalty. Little things like that stick in your mind. We all stayed in the top hotels. The Wembley dressing room itself, I remember Kenny Jones, who was the trainer at the time, all giving us a rub down, and he was saying this, oh, what a fantastic play. Just looking around the dressing rooms, it was brilliant.
What was it with you and the fans?
I don't know what it was. Maybe it was that they could associate with me coming from non-league and sort of getting that chance and really putting everything into it. You know, although I could play, I wouldn't say I was the best player they had. I wasn't the most skillful, but I had other qualities to my game. I could score goals, but I got involved. I liked to tackle, and maybe they could see that. Maybe they could associate with something like that. And At times I found it a little bit embarrassing, although I loved it. I loved all Eddie, you know, it didn't make me feel $1 million, it did, but I found it a little bit embarrassing in the sense that Ian Muir could probably nutmeg 3 or 4 players, kill one in the top corner, and the crowd would just cheer. I maybe didn't touch the ball for 20 minutes, but went flying into somebody and they start singing my name. And it was strange in a way. I find it a little bit similar to Mascherano at Liverpool. Now, I'm not a big fan of his because I don't think I should maybe say this, but he doesn't pass the ball as well as a Liverpool player should. But the fans love him because he gets involved and he breaks things up.
They adored you. What did you think about them?
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, really, I loved it. I loved it. It was like maybe a mutual respect, I suppose. Always gave them a clap my hands at the end of every game. And to be honest, I don't go back to Tranmere as often as I should because of my business. But I keep saying to me, lad, you know, we'll go back there and just see if anyone does remember me, you know.
Eddie, there was a couple of posts on the on one of the Tranmere forums where the fans go on and reminisce about old times, and somebody brought up your name. Somebody's come up here and said that his greatest memory was Northampton away at the old County Ground. Meccano stand on one side, a length of rope separating one side of the pitch from the cricket ground, and the away end, which was partially below pitch level, so the heads of those at the front were just above the level with the players' knees. I think we won 4-0. Eddie got a couple. He came up for a corner and the Super White Army were chanting his name in the prescribed manner, the song that you sung before. He was obviously watching Johnny Morrissey lining up the knock, lining up the kick rather, but his right arm was pumping rhythmically in the time with the crowd's chant. I seem to remember young Kenny Irons coming on as sub. It might even have been his debut, though I'm sure someone will put me right. Do you remember that game?
Oh, I remember the game, yeah. I remember most games I scored then, I scored two. I think Mark Hughes scored as well. He scored one on the side of the bar and it sort of bounced down. And I don't think it went over the line. I headed it back over, so I really scored 3. But they gave that goal to Mark Hughes. Yeah. But I remember scoring my second goal and running into the crowd. We did have a good away following, actually. And remember running into the crowd and sort of lapping it up and getting mobbed by them, yeah.
Somebody says here, Eddie Bishop scored a hat-trick in the first game I ever attended at Prenton Park, a 6-2 victory over Mansfield in the 1991 season. I seem to recall his third being an audacious lob over the keeper from 40 or so yards.
Chance here, Bishop shoots! And Bishop scores for Tranmere Rovers 4-2 after Farclough tried to work the ball away and he was dispossessed on the edge of the penalty area, and Bishop and McCarrick together battled for it, and Bishop lashed a right-footed shot past Lukic, 4-2. Tranmere taken by Harvey Lowe. Here comes McCarrick just outside the penalty area, tries a shot, it hits the post and goes in. Eddie Bishop scores for Tranmere Rovers on his debut this season. That is his first start of the season, and Eddie Bishop was the man on the spot. Bishop getting the goal, Tranmere Rovers level.
That was a great night, that, yeah. It was a midweek, it might have been a Monday night, a Monday or Friday, definitely a midweek game. I think I intercepted a back pass, I'm not sure now. And I did have quite a lot of time to think about it, and I see the keeper coming and I just fell under the bar. That was a nice night, that one, yeah.
Bishop gets clear after a good tackle from McCarrick, chips the goalkeeper, glorious goal by Eddie Bishop. 5-2 for Tranmere against Mansfield, and the crowd will be happy tonight when they go home. Eddie Bishop has scored 3 and completed his hat-trick. The first start he's had not only this season, but since last March. And Eddie Bishop coming into midfield for Tranmere's most expensive signing, Neil McNabb, scoring a hat-trick. And it'll be very, very difficult for him to be left out in the next game, whether McNabb is fit or not. So Tranmere Rovers wrapping in 6 goals against Mansfield Town.
Well, Eddie, congratulations. Not every day you score a hat-trick. That's your first in league football, I think.
Yeah, it's not every day. Get a game either. it is my first hat-trick, and I'm very pleased with the way it went tonight.
What about the way things went in the game? Because Johnny King made a crucial switch at half-time, which I think turned things in your favour.
Well, that's right. The gaffer wasn't happy, and he made a couple of changes. He put Dave Higgins back into his normal position, you know, central defence, where he's more comfortable. Put Steely back up front, you know, where he could hold things up for us, and we started playing the way we normally can, you know.
Somebody who's been to see you play for Chester, and he said, I went to see him a few times for Chester, his game had really developed, he was a class above for them, but he seemed to lose his edge a little bit, but he was far too good for Chester at that time. Maybe there's a little bit of competition between Tranmere and Chester developing there.
Well, that's very, very nice of you to see. So I don't really mean my game developed. I think it more or less stayed the same. Maybe, I think if anything, it probably calmed down. I never really got into the referee's bad books as much as Chester as I did with Samir. Maybe it calmed down a bit as I got older. Well, it's a very nice one to say so.
And just one final one here, which is probably the nicest of all of them. He's a true legend. He terrified any opponent who thought they were going to have an easy ride against us. He had a really distinctive running style too, but what a tackler.
that's very nice. Yeah, it's for someone to say you're a legend. I've only been there a couple of years. It's that's nice. It's nice to be remembered that way, because it must be 15 years since I've been there. So that's nice to hear things like that. Yeah, thank you.
You spoke about liking a tackle. Let's talk about your disciplinary record, because if I think back to when I was a little bit younger and used to watch you, did you feel you were a marked man with referees even at that level?
Yeah, maybe sometimes your reputation can go before you, I suppose. I did get sent off a few times. A few times I probably did deserve. I got a bit hot-headed at times. But I think it was just the nature of my game. Once I was committed to a tackle or a header or whatever, there was no pulling back. And maybe if that play was a little bit too quick for me, I'd catch him. And it often looked worse than it was. But in all the time I played, I never ever got sent off or booked for dissent. It was always for tackles, whether that makes you sound any better. It was always just for being about 5 minutes late, you know. Yeah.
What John King stories have you got from that time? Every ex-player at Tranmere remembers Johnny King for certain things, his team talks and whatever. Yeah. Have you got any stories about him?
His team talks were fantastic. He was always talking about getting on the beach at the end of the season. He compared everything to a bit of a boat voyage. And, you know, we're getting closer to the beach now, lads. And he always said that. I remember having a go at him one time. Obviously, I was in and out the side, and he picked the team. He'd come in and he just picked the team, and he never sort of said to me, "I'm leaving you out today, Bish." He just picked the team, and I was a little bit childish in a way. I went to see him and said, "You know, you should have told me first. Should have told me first." And he said, "Right, okay, Bish. Well, what we'll do next time? Next time, I'm going to pick the team. If you're not playing, I'll bring you into the office, sit you in the corner, give you an ice cream, and then I'll tell you." And I just said, yeah, I get your point. And I just walked out then. But he was great. He was great for me. And I've always got a lot of time with John King, because he gave me my chance in league football. And I thought he was brilliant. He was always happy. He always seemed happy. We'd be it's Tuesday morning, it's throwing it down with rain, and we're sort of having a cup of tea waiting to go into the training ground. And you just hear somebody whistling and singing or Frank Sinatra tunes or something. And it was him. He always seemed happy.
One other thing that most neutrals remember about Tranmere is not just the Wembley trips, it was the camaraderie. You had a great team spirit, didn't you? You were pals off the pitch as well.
Yeah, I had a lot of friends at Tranmere. I've pals with them all, really. Obviously, Mark McCarry, because we went to school together. He sticks out as one of my best mates. But David Martin, Dale, Dave Higgins, the lads that come from non-league. I don't think there was, you know, sometimes you get it in team where there's cliques, where there's maybe three or four stay together. And it wasn't, it was all a good bunch. Being the type of character I am, and a bit of a joker and all that, I like to think I was friends with them all, really. Yeah.
Did the manager encourage that, the fact that you went out and socialised together off the pitch as well? If you won on a Friday night, you were more often than not all out on the beer together afterwards, weren't you?
I don't think he was too bothered by it, as long as we won, I suppose. You know, it was different in them days. We were allowed to go out and have a few beers. Even going down on a Friday night for games in London, we wouldn't go mad, but we'd have a pint in the bar before the game, you know, before we went to bed in the hotel, or just to get that togetherness, you know. It was good.
Tell us about the time that the Tranmere sort of that adventure came to an end then. I suppose it was quite a sad moment, wasn't it, when you thought that, you know, you're going to have to leave for pastures new?
Yeah, it was, but I remember driving away from the training ground of Valley Road, and not that sort of, I'd only been there 2.5-3 years. I hadn't been there a lifetime, although it was great for me. First experience of league football. But I had to look forward to this new challenge, you know. I was offered a decent contract at Chester. We were getting a new stadium built, and it all sounded like it was going to be great for me. So I didn't sort of leave with regrets. I just left with happy memories.
$70,000 they paid for you. You were a record signing at Chester at that time.
Yeah, I think I was the record signing for a few months, and I think he signed Stuart Rim and he broke it again. So it was nice to have that little tag for a while, yeah, maybe sort of feel a little bit special. Yeah. But I've got some nice memories from Chester as well. We had some big important cup games. I remember playing Manchester City in one of the cups, Spurs, I get a game, played against them, played at White Hart Lane again. Yeah, had some good times at Chester, some funny times as well. A little fallout with Mad Harry, you know, but apparently the first goal score by Chester player of the day was by me, so that's a little something as well to hold on to, yeah. But it was good.
You helped them avoid relegation as well last season before injury struck you, 19 games and 7 goals. Still that sort of strong theme that comes through your career is the goals that you scored.
I've got the effusion is in me. Not as disciplined as what most managers would like, I suppose, but I like to get forward, I like to get into the box, and I think I had a knack of scoring goals. Even now, I'm still playing now on a Sunday, but I play up front. Because it's not better than scoring goals, and when you've experienced it, you want a little bit more of it, and I just like to get forward and get tangled on the end of things, yeah.
City Sport. One player, one life. The match of my life. City Talk 105.9. Each day, City Talk and Riverford Organic Vegetables will be bringing you our guide to eating organically and seasonally. Today, we're looking at getting the best value from a veg box.
It's the end of the month, and all you've got left in the cupboard is a few vegetables. With a bit of creativity, you can easily turn them into a tasty meal that suits the season. Liven up a pasta salad with roasted red peppers and courgettes, or make your own coleslaw with grated carrots and cabbage.
For more great recipes and info, and to find out how you can have seasonal, organic vegetables delivered to your door, log on to citytalk.fm/Riverford. Eat organically with Riverford and City Talk 105.9.
Not you as well, mate. Congratulations on the new job, Andy.
Everybody's escaping to a better job. citytalkjobs.co.uk.
Summer is all about enjoying the great outdoors. So as this bank holiday is the last one before summer, shouldn't you get your interior home projects finished? Get down to Wickes now, where you can find 20% off all floor tiles, 15% off all laminate flooring, and 20% off all Wickes Performance Power Tools. Wickes help with your big projects. That's why they were voted number one in an independent customer poll. So if you want to finish your... so you can make the most of your... get down to Wickes and put the pro into your project. Offers must end Sunday, 1st of June.
Elegance. Excitement. Anticipation. Feel the rush of the races. The 2008 racing season is underway at Chester Racecourse. And June the 10th is Ladies' Evening, the perfect occasion for full-on glamour, chilled champagne, and having a flutter on the horses. It's your turn to turn heads. Enter our Best Dress competition, and you could be in with a chance of winning a £4,000 Armand Resorts luxury Caribbean holiday. Secure your tickets now for Ladies' Evening, Tuesday, June the 10th. Call 01244-304-610 or click chester-races.com. Chester Racecourse. Feel the rush. Offer conditions apply.
The Tradition ICAB Liverpool International Tennis Tournament takes place from the 10th to the 15th of June at Calderstones Park, Liverpool. From rising stars to legends, it's 6 days of top-class tennis, including rising ATP and WTA stars Javier Malis and Caroline Wozniacki, and Wimbledon winners Pat Cash, Goran Ivanisevic, Jana Novotna, Martina Hingis and Mansour Bahrami. Tickets start at just £12. For yours, call 0870 1690 107 or visit liverpooltennis.co.uk.
City Sport with Peter McDowell. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back. We're talking Tranmere legend tonight, Eddie Bishop. He's told us in the first couple of parts about his late break into the game, also the camaraderie that they had at Tranmere in those Wembley days as well, which were so greatly linked with the team of that era and cup competitions, and also the playoffs as well. There's one very, very famous story, though, about Eddie Bishop after he'd left Tranmere, because, of course, he kept all of those friends from the days when he was there as a player, and the day at which he decided that after he'd left, a couple of months later, when he'd actually joined Chester City, that he was going to go and watch his old pals play at Wembley against Bolton in the playoff final where they gained promotion. We take it back and start the story from the beginning and how and why he decided to go.
City Sport. One player, one life. The match of my life. City Talk 105.9.
I was out on a Saturday night with a few friends, and he was saying, "Are you a little bit sick? You know, the playoffs tomorrow. That could have been you if you'd stayed." Well, no, I said, "I'm happy now. It's the way things go." But I woke up that Sunday morning thinking, "I want to go. I want to go see the lads at Wembley." Didn't have a ticket. I maybe just being a bit daft, so I just put my denim, pair of jeans on, the denim jacket, and a tram this year that I'd wore the year before at Wembley. I just put that on. I started driving. I was supposed to be working that day in the workshop with my dad. We'd got this business going, and started driving towards Wembley. And I pulled in at Sandbach service station. I thought, "What are you doing? You're all the way down there. You've got no ticket." Anyway, I had a bit of breakfast, sort of got myself together, and I thought, no, I still want to go, but I'm not driving, I'll see if I can get a lift. So I started thumbing the lift at 8 o'clock in the morning, and all the Bolton fans were going past and giving me the whistles and bees. And then this car pulled up with four or five lads from Rock Ferry. I said, yeah, mate, get in with us. But they didn't recognise who I was, so I just sat in the middle in the back, and he gave me a can of beer, 8 o'clock in the morning, and another can, and just chatting away. And I've been driving about half an hour or so, and the driver just turned around and said, what's your name anyway, mate? I said, it's Eddie. And he went, I bloody knew it. I knew it. And he was him. And anyway, they all started talking. What are you busy with? So he put his foot down there, caught up with this minibus, was pressing his horn. Look who we've got. And they were fantastic. They really looked after me. We got to this pub outside Wembley, and anyway, I sat down with them, having a few drinks there with them, and we got to about half past one, so I thought, I better go and get a ticket. So I said to that to them, bought them a crate of beer and stuff, and I made my way towards Wembley then, walking down towards Wembley, where the tunnel entrance was. And the coach starts coming in with Tramier coach on, and all the fans are waving, and I'm standing there with all the speckies, and I'm waving at the bus, and I remember Ian Muir looking at me going, what are you doing? What are you doing here? So when he was on crutches at the time. I thought he must have played. Obviously, he was on crutches. And he's come over and said, what are you doing? I said, oh, I've just come down. I said, I've got no ticket. He said, yeah, come in with us. So I think I started carrying the kit bag or something, and I managed to get in. So we got into the tunnel way, and all the players got off the coach then with their suits on and all their roses in the lapels, started walking out onto the pitch to wave to the crowd and everything. And I walked out with them, looking like Shaking Stevens with all my denims on. So I'm waving to the crowd as well, and is that shot down there? So next minute, one of you guys came along and put a microphone in front of me. And you've got to remember, I've been drinking all kinds of beer all day. And I started giving this interview on the radio, don't know what I was saying. But my dad is back in the workshop, back in Runcorn, listening to the game, wondering why I haven't turned up at work. And he got his answer then. So that was funny. And I remember, anyway, Johnny King's walking past me, and he put his arm around me. Hello, bitch, what are you doing here? I said, oh, I had to come down, see it from the other side. I said, you know what, Gaffer? I still call him Gaffer. I said, I haven't got a ticket. He said, don't worry about it, come and sit with us. So I sat on the bench. with my denims on, and just watching the game. And I think Chrissy Malkin scored the winner, and they went up, and I joined in the celebrations on the pitch, dived in the bath with all the players, and came on the bus back with them. And it was brilliant. It was a great day.
It's an amazing story from two counts. Yeah, first of all, you know, that you wanted to go down. You didn't feel as though, you know, you'd missed out on anything. And secondly, the fact that they opened you, you know, they welcomed you with open arms.
Yeah.
Come and join in with us.
I think what was good about it, I'd been there the year before as a player, and I was going back the next year as a fan. Mm. You know, I went as a supporter, and I'd seen it from both sides. It was great. And I'm glad I'd done it. I got I was a little embarrassed that the following day. Got a bit of a stick about it, but then the newspapers found out about it. But no, I'm glad I'd done it. It was good. It's a nice little story.
I think it's probably cemented you as a cult hero, the fact that you went and did that for them. Yeah. Take us through the next couple of years then. I mean, Chester, and then there was a spell at Crewe for you, wasn't there, as well?
Yeah, I was at Chester for a couple of years. But while I was at Crewe, I was there for 6 games. I was injured for 3 of them. And the 3 games that I did play, we lost.
So that's what happened to Crewe.
So I thought they all fancied me, really. But I was glad to get back to Chester then. I sorted my differences out with Harry, and I went back there and had another 3 years there with various managers after Harry got sacked.
95-96, scored in the first 5 games of the season. On a great scoring run again.
That was me last season, yeah. I'd always had a lot of trouble with groin injuries, and I'd had a couple of hernia operations. But that final season, Kevin Rackley was the manager, and he was playing me on the left-hand side of midfield. And he encouraged me to get forward, get into the box. And I remember at one time, the scoring record in the newspaper, I'd scored 6. I was top goal scorer in the league, joint with Alan Shearer. And I was so made up with that.
I hope you kept it.
I'll have that somewhere, yeah. But then, I think it was only a couple of games after that, something went wrong with my groin again, and I didn't play again. I was missing the whole season, and then the doctor advised me not to. He said the full-time training wouldn't do me any good, so I was advised. I had my business going then as well, and I was advised to maybe play part-time, so I sort of left Chester and went back to Northwich Vicks then.
Do you remember much about a time when you were injured and you grabbed the PA mic at Chester? A game against Hereford. Talk us through that.
You know what, I'm more remembered for things I've done off the pitch than on the pitch, really. That was quite funny, that. During one of my lengthy injuries. As I say, we're in this new stadium, brand new PA system there, and I'm in one of the boxes watching the game, and it was Stuart Rimmer had been whipped up, blatant penalty. It was a blatant penalty, and I just sort of sat back in my chair. Oh, I don't believe that. And as I sat back, I could see the next room to me, where the PA announcer sat, and the door was open. And I just couldn't resist. I just walked in, sat down, and I just pressed this red button, and everything lit up. I went, "Oh!" And the mic was there, and I just went, "You must be bloody joking, ref." Something like that, words to that effect. Anyway, and next minute, everybody in the ground just looked up at the where the PA announcer sat, and stewards were running everywhere, and I just sat back, and that next one, I tried to deny it was me, but the crowd was singing my name, Eddie, give us a song.
Because that was another thing you remembered for a tram. I think it was Steve Mungall's testimonial dinner, wasn't it, when you got up and did a bit of Elvis, and the TV was soon onto that as well, weren't they?
Yeah, I always did a bit of singing on the coach, and when we had our end of season trips in Spain and stuff, I was always singing. But Steve Mungall had this testimonial dinner, do party type of thing, and he wanted me and Eric Nixon to do a little bit of a turn for him. So I said, yeah, okay. So we got a proper suit kitted out for him. I got this woman to make a suit for me. Eric went on and did his bit. He was dressed up as some kind of medallion man or something. He sang a few Cliff Richard numbers and Neil Diamond and that. And he was good, great. But then I had to come on as Elvis then, and it was fantastic. The actual singer was crap, you know, but the actual atmosphere, the whole night, 600 people there, Tammy supporters, and I've come on the stage and I'm singing these songs, and it was brilliant. And then the TV heard about it, and I had to do a little bit for the TV as well, so I got sort of remembered as a big Elvis fan, and I wasn't really. I'm more into the Beatles and McCartney and people like that, but this Elvis thing seemed to stick with me, and I just couldn't shake it off. Even I've got friends who call me Elvis when they phone up. All right, Elvis.
You, as you say, you were back at Northwich by 96, and you done well for them. You played 34 games in the conference over the next couple of years, and then coaching and management came along soon after that as well. You had an involvement in sort of passing on a bit of your knowledge.
Yeah, I left Northwich and went on to a team called Witton Albion, another local side in the Mid-Cheshire area. And I went assistant manager to Nigel Gleghorn, ex-Birmingham and Stoke player. I was with him for a couple of years, and we'd done well at Witton. We'd done well. We just missed out on promotion on goal difference to Accrington Stanley a couple of years later there in the Football League. So we were that close. And during my time as assistant manager, then Nigel moved on to other things, and I got the manager's job. I was there for a short while. Didn't get on with the chairman. Something happened, so I resigned from that. Went with Nigel again down at Nantwich, and just sort of floated around a few amateur non-league clubs doing a bit of coaching. They had a little spell at Runcorn as well. And then decided to put more of my attention into my business then. I moved premises with my business, which meant that I had to be here where we are now more or less 7 days a week, because Saturday is a busy day for me. So got out of that coaching side then, but I still got an interest in football because I still play now on a Sunday, believe it or not.
What about the coaching and the management side? How did you find that?
I liked it, yeah. It was I had no qualms about going into a dressing room and picking a team, leaving players out, giving players a bit of a roasting. That didn't bother me at all. As a player, when you lose, obviously you feel it. You know, you're a bit disappointed. But as a manager, I found it 10 times worse. You tend to take everything on. You're thinking about things all the time. You feel if anything goes wrong, you feel as though it's your fault, you know. And the stress of it, I can understand how some of these managers now really, you know, the hair's falling out and they're going grey, you know, I can see why. If you're that way inclined, if you're that passionate about it, it can have that effect on you.
Do you miss it?
Which, football or the coaching?
Well, both sides, really, the playing.
I don't really miss the football because I still play. I still have that same laugh in the dressing room with the players on a Sunday morning, although I'm 25 years old, most of them. But I still get a crack out of that. So I don't miss it as much as I thought. Well, maybe if I stop playing on a Sunday, which I probably will next year, Maybe I will miss it, yeah.
So what makes you still want to go out and play? I mean, you're 46 now, you won't mind me saying that. You don't probably look an awful lot heavier than when you were playing. You still look as young as you ever did.
Yeah, well, I try to keep myself fit. We work quite a physical job, so that keeps me trim. I go to the gym a couple of times a week, and I still get the same buzz from it. I still get the same buzz. Still clean my boots on a Saturday night before. It was years ago when I was at Sammy. I think Kenny Hines used to clean my boots. So I still get the same buzz from it. The only thing that I don't like about it now is the aches and pains that you get on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And it's not just your legs, it's your arms, your back, your neck, everything aches. But it's a nice ache. But it's just still playing. I often wonder now, you hear the players packing in. Like Lineker packed in early. Steve McManaman, people like that, they packed in, I think, at a very early age, early 30s. But if you love football, how do they play their football? I don't suppose Lineker plays on a Sunday or McManaman. So if you love the game and you want to play football, that you still got to play. I often wonder, these players who finished early, I know they played maybe their charity game, but to play regular, if you love it, carry on playing.
Was that the main thing that got you into the professional game? Because I was speaking to your brother earlier on today, and he said, you know, when we were kids, my dad used to always joke and say I was a better player than him. But said that you have to tackle him about that. Yeah, John said that the main difference was that he thought football loved him, whereas you love football, and that was the key.
Yeah, I always kept myself fit. I had I could say that with probably a lot of players who were probably more skillful than me. Players I went to school with had more, but they didn't have that desire. The desire can get you a long way. Maybe I had that too. And I had a good 9-10 year career in the game, professional career. So I suppose if I didn't have that desire to want it and that determination, maybe I wouldn't have had that. I'd have just probably floated around to the non-league scene.
We spoke very early on in the interview about you making the breakthrough to professional football at the age of 25, and there's quite an infamous story that goes around that you got younger and younger when it went into contract negotiations with different clubs. Tell us what happened there.
Well, it was when I first signed for Tranmere, it had in the paper that I was 24 when I was really 25. So I thought, well I'm not gonna argue with that, I'll just leave it at that. So throughout my football career, everyone just thought I was a year younger. You know, they never asked for your passport or anything like that. So I just left it the way it was. And I thought, well, when I get into my 30s and I'm just looking for that extra year, I might just get it. And it did work. It worked a couple of times when I went back to Northwich Vicks. The manager at the time wasn't going to sign players over a certain age, and I just sort of fell into that bracket. And I got another year out of it, so it worked well in the end.
I think you were twin brothers with John, who's about 5 years younger than you at one stage, right?
He's 5 years younger. He seems to be catching me up, yeah.
Tell us what Eddie Bishop gets up to these days then. I mean, football and management to one side, at least for the moment. You never want to rule out coming back into football, but what keeps you busy these days?
Well, where we are now, my business, I'm very involved with this raw time business I've got, doing the gates and railings. I've been doing that now for 15 years. I actually started doing it when I was playing for Tranmere. You have that much free time as a pro, and I wasn't used to that. You know, coming into the professional game, you finish training at past 12, 1 o'clock, and you've got the rest of the day to yourself. So I started doing gates in the house we were living at the time. I had this quite a fair-sized garage, and I started making gates there for when I stopped playing football, and it's turned into quite a successful business. Well, successful in the sense that I'm still doing it, I'm making a good living out of it. So that takes up a lot of my time now. Blakemere Craft Centre, which is out in Cheshire, mid-Cheshire, Sandy Way in Northwich. So if anyone wants a gate, they only have to head down that way. But it's a nice place to work at. It's a good location. It's a big visitor attraction place, and I get a lot of passing trade of a weekend, which takes up a lot of my time, which is why I can't really get involved on a Saturday with the football anymore. But I enjoy it. It's something I learned so well when I was 16, and I'm glad I've been able to put it to good use. I play squash once or twice a week with my son, Lee. I enjoy that. That helps keep me fit as well, but we're really into that.
John Bishop is the other side of the famous Bishop family, and he gave me a few gems to ask you about today, and he said that he's had to stop watching games. He said you're a terrible spectator. You're big Liverpool fans, the two of you, and he says you just shout at the telly constantly.
Yeah, does he? I suppose I do, yeah, maybe get involved. I've seen my dad rolling his eyes sometimes as well, because I suppose a little bit critical at times, you know. It's just, I suppose I am a bad spectator. You always expect them to do a little bit better. I'm not a big Benitez fan, to be honest. I'm not a big Benitez fan, and I get a little bit critical at times, and I suppose I am a bit of a pain in the bum to watch a match with you.
How would you like Tranmere fans to remember you?
Probably more than just an Elvis impersonator. Probably just as a 100% guy who gave everything when he played, and that's it really. I can't really say more than that. Obviously, the odd goal or score for them.
Eddie, only remains for me to say thank you for sharing some great memories. I'm sure Tranmere fans everywhere will join me in saying that you were a legend, a cult hero at Tranmere, so thanks for the memories.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I've enjoyed doing the interviews.
City Sport. One player, one life. The match of my life. City Talk 105.9.
There you go, Eddie Bishop, formerly of Tranmere Rovers. Very understated, I'm sure you'll agree. And he's a fantastic guy as well. And John Bishop, of course, is his brother. Works on City Talk, so we are slightly biased, but really enjoyed that chat. I, as you probably know by now, I'm a big Tranmere fan, so it was a little bit self-indulgent me going along to see Eddie Bishop, but